So while the shuffling is still happening, I just invite you to sit with the breath and notice the tendency of the mind to want to reach out and sort of analyze what's going on, but keep the mind present and keep it on the breath. It's your tether. And perhaps throughout the day we can, I do want people to be comfortable because we'll be sitting, so if you need to move and get on the couch and then move and get up again, you know, I'm going to probably just keep going, but you just shift and do what you need to do. But again, I ask people to just sort of stay present with the practice, stay focused on the breath, and I can't help it, my Tibetan Buddhism slips in here. You know, the practitioners tell you, if you're going there to try to figure out what's going on, that is a form of grasping. And grasping and clinging to the past, to experiences, and grasping towards the future are the two very things that keep us in cyclic existence and in suffering. So, and I feel that that's a condition that we're frequently caught in. We're either reflecting on the past and sort of going over and over and over it, or we're projecting into the future, which of course we can't possibly know, but we somehow think we can do that, and we're missing the present moment. It's like the practice of Thich Nhat Hanh. What was that phrase again?
Dwelling in the present moment.
And
I know this is a wonderful moment.
I know this is a wonderful moment.
Dwelling in this present moment, I know this is a wonderful moment. How many people have driven about town and gotten home or to the shopping center and thought, how did I get here? Like the mind is... And I like telling this story again. I know Murshid Hazrat Anai Khan was very influenced by the Vedic tradition and the Buddhist tradition, so I feel at liberty to bring these ideas in. But I remember sort of doing these walkabouts on the Himalayan mountains with my monk friends, and they'd always say to even like reach out and grab, like, oh, isn't that a pretty flower, that's a form, again, of grasping, that one can observe the beauty of the flower, but it's like we stay here, and that comes towards us instead of us getting up and going out towards that. You see the difference in the energy? Mm. So it's like, and the Buddhists would say, if you allow the mind wander outside of your home, then you've left your home open for intruders. So impressions can easily then come into that vacant space that we have allowed to be created within us. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
It's a nice analogy. So just always trying. It's, you know, we're learning it. It's a practice. You know, that's why we call it practice, because we're always trying to learn that and remember it. Remember it. I invite you to allow yourself to just feel the presence of your body and your breath and to just settle in. If we can just take this day as a day of really retreat and be mindful of the breath, even when we speak during our breaks, maybe just a little slower and a little softer. No excitement, just relaxed openness. You know, we so desperately need this in our lives. Our nervous systems are really jarred constantly. And so to really... And you know, we've heard these stories about Hazrat Anai Khan. Remember? He walked very slowly. If you've seen... Have you seen films of him walking? Very slow walk. No quick things. And he had a certain... It was said that he never ran. He'd never take that breath out of rhythm. Imagine that. And so, can we also do that? I think so. And I think we can offer that that vibration to those around us, to those we work with, to people in our families, even, you know, in the general public when we're out and about. People notice it, you know. It can also be a little bit irritating when you're trying to sit there by yourself and all these people want to come and sit around you. Do you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And then I think, well, maybe they just feel something and they want to be so close. But it's like a whole restaurant and it's like they come and sit right there. And you do. Have you had that happen? Yeah. So it happens like that too. And that's a good thing. It's my deal. So I'm going to use this bowl again. I want to show you the beautiful inside of this bowl. Some of you have seen it. Can you see it? Mm-hmm. Can you see it? Mm-hmm. It's Shakyamuni Buddha. And this bowl has come from Tibet. So it's made a long journey to be here with us. And I think a lot of you know about these bowls, but they're made of 7 different metals, and they're called medicine bowls in Tibet. And this one has a mantra written on it. Om Ma Ni Ped Me Hum Hri. So as we're doing the bowls, it's actually saying the mantra. That mantra, that vibration of that mantra is getting spread out. And they actually use these for healing purposes. They'll put them lying down on parts of people's bodies and use them to... If used in a counterclockwise direction, it is to extract negative vibrations or disease from the body. And in a clockwise direction, it's to draw in positivity, harmony, and balance. So they're very, you know, they're beautiful, and you could hear, those that were here earlier, the sound. But I think before we begin, why don't we say names? And we'll just quietly say names. I'm Nuria. My name's Nuria, and I want to thank you so much, Trish, for hosting this, and I want to thank Musa and Hakima for spreading the word and making sure things got coordinated. And I know Halima, you had written, I think, to me. Is that right? No. Yeah, a while ago, and I know Shamsuddin also. So everyone was very welcoming, and I know some people traveled from some distance to be here, so thank you for that. And I hope it's a meaningful afternoon and evening. I really want to keep things in context and say that anything that should be of benefit to you today is purely the blessing of Hazrat Anayat Khan, and any dissatisfaction that may arise or disappointment, that's my contribution to you. If something seems incomplete or unclear, that's pure Nuria, so I apologize for that in advance. I know we're supposed to go till noon or thereabouts, and then there'll be a break, and then we start at 2 to 4, and then this evening from 7 to 9, is that correct? Is that the time frame? Or? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think 7 to 9.
The zikr time, and I think Hakima's going to bless us with a zikr that's more in movement. Is mm-hmm. that correct? And then I would like to offer to you, if you're willing, I think maybe some of you know this. You all know the zikr, but I'm not sure you've had the opportunity to perform it in the classical way. The Hazrat Anayat Khan zikr is what it's called. And it's a sitting zikr. So it's done differently than we frequently do our zikrs here, and I'd like to teach you, offer the instruction of Murshids on the different sections of the zikr and the posture and all of this, the movement. And I'm sure you've done it, yes, in Australia. Mm-hmm. Have you done it here in that way?
Yes, with
okay.
the diet and...
You did it with me while at camp.
At camp.
Some of us have.
Good. Mm-hmm. And you use the CD?
Yes. still have a cassette tape.
Okay, good. Well, I actually have an extra CD that I can leave behind with you all if you'd like it.
Oh, I can make copies of it.
Yeah. If you'd like. And also on that CD is also what's called the chromatic zicker. So you use different tones at the different chakra points and sing the zicker at different tones. So I don't have those instructions, but I can make sure you get them because the music's on that CD. And it might be nice to do as a practice. Okay, I talked a lot. I'm sorry I took up a lot of time there. But,
My name is Royda.
Melinda.
Yeah.
Madhuri. Pink
one.
Mataji.
Majida.
Karima Gita.
Shamsuddin. Abhil Aziz.
Trisha.
Halima.
Joan.
Takina.
Carolyn Nuri Kabi.
Musa.
Cabria.
Francis.
Kaya.
Landon.
Taj.
Nancy.
Mary Lou.
And your name again?
Linden.
Like Lyndon Johnson.
Wonderful.
That's what he told me yesterday.
Oh, it helps remember. Let's remember. Okay. So the flow of the morning will be just sort of focusing on the breath. I'd like to share. I know you've been studying the Gathas here. Is that correct? Mm-hmm. And have you worked your way all through it, and you're starting again, or where are you in the Gathas?
Some of us have been through it
many times.
Years.
I'll be focusing on the teachings from the Gathas actually on the breath, but I'll be bringing in esoteric practices. Which have you been instructing in the Gathas, or do you just share, Hakima? How does that work?
Read
with each other, okay? And
a long time Zakir did it; he's passed it on.
Okay. But I'd like to offer these practices because, in some ways, it was very illuminating to me that there had been a kind of distillation or altering of some of the practices, and I'm very grateful for that as well, but I'm very happy to learn the more authentic transmission from Hazar and Icon. So I'd like to offer that.
Can I ask where
mm-hmm.
you learned them?
This is maybe news to some of you, too. I know that I've started spreading this information. Our local community in Kansas City is aware of this. For a long time, I was a representative for the Sufi Order. I think you may have known that. And for about 7 years, I've been, for many years, you know, I was involved in my Tibetan Buddhist practice. I never moved away from Sufism. I've always been involved in my Sufi practice as well, on a daily basis, as well as my Catholic practices. I haven't given up my novenas. So, but I, after the passing of Pir Vilayat, there was a different direction that, at least in my experience, not saying this for anyone else, but for me, felt as if the transmission was moving in a different direction. And I don't say this, I don't mean any disrespect to anyone, including Pir Zia, but for me, I knew this was not my direction. So I had, through a series of odd circumstances, while I was still a representative for the Sufi order, Jean-Pierre, some of you know Jean-Pierre in New York, had written to me and said that Pir Hidayat and Murshida Aziza were coming to the area because a conductor from New York was going to play their music at the Suzuki School of Music at Ottawa University. And did I know where Ottawa was in relationship to Kansas City? And could I offer some help to in terms of what was the route to travel? And, you know, it was Ottawa University, by the way, in Kansas, so not in Canada. But I said, well, yeah, I mean, I fly that route all the time to India. I fly through Amsterdam, so they just have to go Amsterdam, Detroit, or Minneapolis, Kansas City. And I had contacted the conductor. I mean, it was like I got intricately woven into this whole, you know, affair. And so when I mentioned it to my husband, Joe, who some of you know, and I said, it's Pir Vilayet's brother, he said, well, we should invite him to be our guest. And I thought that was very sweet and generous. And I said, I had also felt the same way, but I didn't want to impose anything on you. And so the next thing I know, after I send this information back to Jean-Pierre, I sent it through the college where I teach, that account, so it had my identifier on it in terms of my phone number and my title and everything. And so I'm sitting in my office, and I answer the phone. Stephanie says, hello, graphic designer. hello? Is it Nuria? And it's like... Pir Hidayet? And he's like, no, it's just Hidayet, you know. And he said, well, we're very grateful for you taking the time to try to help us, and we're so, the offer to stay in your home was so touching to us, but we couldn't possibly impose, and could you maybe help find a hotel in Ottawa for us? Well, I don't know if any of you have been to Ottawa. There aren't any hotels. No, my dear. So I said, well, I will do my very best, but you should know that, you know, we have this home that we inherited, and it has 3 floors, and it has 4 bathrooms, and the top floor could be yours, and it has 2 bathrooms, a meditation room, and he goes, Well, that's quite a different story. Well, for us, really, I have to confess, it's all about bathrooms. We really want our And so I didn't intend to tell this story. I said, Spirit of Guidance moved through me, and here it is. So anyway, they came, and Joe, as we were walking to the airport, he said, are you nervous? And I said, no, not at all, really. I'm quite relaxed. Although, at the time, there was some controversy between the Sufi order and the Sufi movement, and I thought, oh, boy, you know, here I am now. I'm right in the middle of it all, you know. And I will say Hidayet was deeply touched, that knowing that I was a Sufi order representative and that we had invited them into the home. And I said, I cannot think of a better way to serve my murshid than to serve the son of my murshid. And so they are amazing people, first of all. They are so natural, what I would say. They always say that, too. In fact, we laughed that we should have these ball caps made up, just be natural. Because they always say the highest form of spirituality is being natural. You know, that's not to mean that we shouldn't have a kind of a dog, what we call a dog in Sufism, a kind of respectfulness and a manner that is humble and respectful, but to be natural who we are. And so on the drive back, and if some of you maybe read this even in Toward the One, I said to them, I said, I'm a rather intuitive person, but nonetheless, you must always say when something is not to your satisfaction and what I can do to help you and make you be more comfortable. And I said, with 2 adult families living under the same household for 10 days, this is the only way it's going to work. And Hidayet goes, well, I'm so glad you said that. That's exactly how we feel. And of course, it goes the same way back to us. You must always tell us. And I said, okay. And on that premise, we started our friendship. And I was so impressed with his manner of teaching, the quality. And because he's really a direct link, you know, and I think that I really selfishly wanted to spend as much time with him as possible. And I have unyieldingly asked him repeatedly to tell us what he remembers of his father and their household and the practices and the summer schools. And now we have them on digitally, and I think we've typed them, and he's editing those stories. Is that right, Karima Gita? Mm-hmm. You've typed them. And at the Federation, I also asked him publicly. I really put him on the spot. They were videotaping it. Mm-hmm. And I said, please, can you tell us and tell us about your mother? Because we hear strange stories sometimes about the mother. And I feel that's very important, that we understand her position Pirani Begum, Amina Begum. She was the only peer that Hazrat Inayat Khan initiated to that level in his lifetime.
Mm.
Think of that.
Mm.
And when he left, there were only four murshids, and they were all women.
Mm.
He understood the feminine vibration was essential to the survival of the message. And the zikr is very much that. That's why I'd like to share it in that very traditional way, because it's a very jalal zikr. It's a very receptive zikr where we can open to the spirit of guidance and feel that vibration. So with that in mind, I had a personal meeting with Pirzia where I respectfully offered back as a monk with their robes, and I offered back my role as a representative, the Sufi movement, as well as the Rouhaniyat, as I've been in dialogue with Shabda, but there's still discussion at certain levels about my relationship there, although I've always been very close to the Rouhaniyat. I think you know that. But the executive council of the Sufi movement have invited me fully into that inner circle as a murshida, and so that's my role now there. I want you to know that. And I don't feel that this means anyone is any higher or any lower. But what it does mean is and I've asked Hakima about her role, and I'm interested to know what other people are doing. It doesn't mean anyone knows anymore. They don't. They're not any more spiritual. They're not any higher than anyone else. In fact, Inayat Khan always said, I'm the feet. I am not the head. So when one has these titles, there comes to a greater level of responsibility to serve others.
Mm-hmm.
It means you have to take on sometimes a greater level of responsibility in bigger lives and busy lives. But it does not mean that I or anyone else in this room with any kind of title is higher or lower. It just is. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So that I want to share with you, and I really believe it's true. And I know there were ladies that traveled with me to Holland and Hidayat, asked them to also take on greater levels of responsibility to serve in any way. And you know that there's the federation of the message in which all of the orders, the Sufi Rouhaniyat International, the Sufi Movement, Sufi Contact, Sufi Way, and it is my understanding that there's been some very deep talks going on this week in Holland with representatives of the Sufi order, including Pirzia and the Sufi movement. They're working towards moving into the federation as well. And so everyone respects everyone's transmission and come into this federation side by side, arms linked together, moving forward. Yeah? Yeah. This is the way. This is the way.
So you learned the breathing at that time?
I have been doing the breathing practices as I was instructed all along, but there have been some esoteric papers, because, you know, the Sufi movement, they have the archives of the practice, the original papers. They're always discovering things, you know? And so they're trying to get them spread, so it's come in that way. And you may know them through Hakima or other people. They may not be as new to you as they have been to me in some ways. So, but I wanted to share them. So that gives us a foundation. Is it okay that I talk about those things so you get
all?
It's a little off the subject of breath, but it's not, because it's about rhythm. And I think that this message of Inayat Khan is the time has come for a unification of that message. And yet, as I said, each order or movement, I like the idea of a movement because it's not an order. You understand even the difference in the quality of those words? Has its own personality. And that's good, because there's some in the Sangeetas it talks about life would be so boring if we were all alike. And then Hazrat Inayat Khan has a sense of humor. It's like, imagine walking around and everyone having your face. We wouldn't do we wouldn't be able to recognize each other. You know? And so in this way, of course, it's appropriate that these different orders with these different attunements have come into being because different people have different temperaments. It's perfect. Absolutely perfect. Buddha's rocking in there. Any questions about what I've said? Some of the people that are you somewhat new to all of this, some of you? I don't know, you're not so familiar. You're probably thinking, what the hell is she talking about? Come on, get on with it.
I have one question.
Yes.
Were you saying that the Sufi movement has not yet joined the Federation?
No, they were the founders. I mean, Hidayat, you should know, went. He had this idea that we should really break down these walls. And he went to Hawaii when Moinuddin Jablonski, Pir Moinuddin Jablonski, was still alive, and they met together to have this ideal come into formulation. Yeah. So they're the founding, the Sufi Rahaniyat and the Sufi movement. It was Hidayat's inspiration, and he, together with Pir Moinuddin, really joined forces and started to create this.
That was when Murshid Hidayat came to the Ozarks to our camp.
Yeah.
He was part of his, he was traveling around the world trying to meet everybody. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he just turned 90 years old on August 6th.
Mm-hmm. He was coming last year or a couple of years ago and didn't have to cancel the trip.
Last December they were actually here. Mm-hmm. In Kansas City, and it was Aziza came with a little bit of it was a bladder infection, but it got very bad quickly, and we didn't know about it because she's rather, you know, she's Germanic and rather stoic, so finally she realized it was a big problem, and she's so small, you know what I mean? It's like, my God, Aziza, put some meat on your bones. And she's always like, no, I'm so fat, I don't need any more meat. It's like, come on, you need a little bit there. You gotta have something to fall back on, you know what I mean? So she became very frail quickly, so they were with us, but we had to cancel events, and she was under doctor's care. So, but they were at the Federation, and they're still traveling. There's a conference in Canada. Do you all know about that? The Mysticism of Sound Conference?
Mm-hmm.
In Vancouver?
Yeah.
By web. Yeah.
They'll be there. Nawal will be there. Murshid Karim Bash will be there. Some other people from Holland are coming. People from Australia will be there. A lot of people from Canada. Some people from America. But it's really an international conference, there's still places available. They're trying to keep it small so it's intimate, no more than 100 people, but there's still some places. If anyone wants to come, I can certainly make sure you get that information. October 24th, 25th, 26th, something like that. Yeah. You'll be in India?
No, it's just October's already full.
Okay. It should be a very interesting conference because the whole idea of the mysticism of sound was so much, you know, of the message. So.
You know, I do have one question, and maybe as much for Hakima as for yourself. And you mentioned Australia. I know that Hakima's murshid was, came through the brother of Hidayat.
His murshid was Mushir
Al-Khan. Uh-huh. As you mentioned Australia, are those folks... Is that movement still extant?
It's the Sufi movement.
Oh, okay. So they're joined with, right?
Yeah, and there's some amazing stories that I had never heard. Hakima knows them, I suppose, but I didn't know much about the brothers. We never hear about them in America. Do you know, have you heard about them?
The brothers of
Hazrat and Icon.
Just read about them.
Oh.
Extraordinary, extraordinary beings that carried on that transmission. And also, Mahmud was a great musician as well. and was very involved in the Western expression of the message in music. And Ali Khan was, I understand, an incredible healer. Like, he would never, ever take credit, but there are many people that I met, elders now, that knew him, that he was their teacher, and were absolutely healed by him. One woman of polio when she was a child. And there's that great story about him having prevented a woman from England getting on the airplane. You know that one? He would not allow her to leave tea. He was having tea with her, and he kept saying, oh, just one more. And she kept, she knew she was going to be late for her flight. And then at one moment he said, this is Ali Khan, Hazrat Ali Khan's brother. And he said, you know, I think you actually need to get to the airport now. Of course, she knew she had missed her flight, but she got there in time for the next flight. But that plane crashed. Great beings, and we've lost that, we've sort of lost that lineage here, you know. We've kind of become like stepchildren or something. But, you know, it's a beautiful lineage, you know, to know about those beings and what they've done and what they brought to us, too.